So in case you're just tuning in, Joe Ham, the host...
That's me. I'm just tuning in.
He was 3 minutes late, and then he arrived with a cup that was not full, whereas my cup, as you can see, look at that, it pretty much runneth over with high quality.
I think we're officially beginning Insert Credit Show, episode number 106.
Episode number My Mom.
More like two away from your special number right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're almost there.
Special friend number.
Soon.
And to celebrate this momentous occasion, we have on longtime Scottish independent activist and feminist and alleged video game developer Matthew Kumar.
That's correct. Alleged is definitely the term.
Oh, and definite Sector Neo Geo Pocket Forum alumnus.
Yeah.
Yes, since 1999 or something like that. We've all known each other a very, very, very long time because we're a million years old.
That's true.
It's very sad.
You know, I have a quick thing that I want to say about knowing each other for a million years old. I saw on Twitter there was a person saying, "Oh my god, I was looking at a picture of Alucard on my phone, and this waitress, and she's like in her 40s, comes over and is like, 'Oh, is that Sephiroth? Like, it's no big deal. Like, everyone knows who Sephiroth is.'" And
boom.
I sent a reply saying, "Well, you know, I played Final Fantasy VII in high school when I was around 17. If that lady played Final Fantasy VII at age 27, which is a very reasonable age, she'd be 44.
So cool.
I was like, that game's almost 20 years old, so the end.
Yeah, I
okay,
think
now
that's
we're
cool.
All going to go kill ourselves.
It's always that disturbing idea that it's 20 years since 1995, not 1985.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yep.
But yeah, the funny thing about Joel is that I haven't actually, like, you know, spoken to you in person in basically ever, possibly, but one of my defining memories is playing Phantasy Star Online with you in, like, 2000 and...
Oh, wow.
I don't know, one or something? I don't know when Phantasy Star Online was big, but it was definitely Dreamcast era. I had my Dreamcast keyboard out after we had played it. We posted like, a selfie of our characters together in Phantasy
Star
Online.
Oh, give me a
Online.
High five right there.
Exactly.
Thank you. Actually, we did meet face-to-face in San Francisco briefly for about 5 minutes, but I like the Phantasy Star Online shit even more. That's more nostalgic right there.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, I was, I don't know, a human ranger-type character? I can't remember. It's been so long.
I believe you mean a human something?
I'll go ahead and say it. If you guys ever saw a really, really tiny girl in Phantasy Star Online, that was me.
Oh, so, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
I think I was hitting on you because you said you'd give me free items or something. Or no, I was giving you free items because you said you'd be my e-girlfriend.
Yeah, because I was a tiny girl. That's actually the truth. That's how that happened. That's how I met all you guys. Right?
Tell us how you met Jared of Subway fame.
Oh, God. How'd I meet Jared of Subway fame?
Who, by the way, we're going to preface this and say that this program is not endorsed or associated in any way with Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, and I just want to take a moment to disavow that I have any sort of an ongoing business or friend relationship with Jared Fogle of Subway fame.
In case the FBI is curious.
I keep seeing articles refer to him as a pitch man, a Subway pitch man. It's not what he did. A pitch man would be like, you know, foisting the product at a camera on TV. Check it out. Have a sando. But that's not what he was. He was a spokesman because he was on a commercial or whatever. Here's how I knew Jared. I got on the school bus and he was on there. He was on the school bus every day. Same. He lived next door to my parents. And he was me and Jared were the fat kids at my high school. We were he was number one, and I was number two. Number two.
Can we get some data to like quantify this some more?
What, like size?
Yeah, like I want to see how I would have ranked compared to Jared, roughly, in my fat guy years.
Jared was a BB. He was a big boy. Jared was.
I thought the whole thing with Jared was that he had those pictures with him in his gigantic trousers, right? So you already have the benchmark.
Yeah, yeah, that's about right. The gigantic trousers.
How do you rank? So I can see how I fit in here.
Well, I wouldn't know Jared. I wasn't quite that much of an achiever, if you know what I mean. I ate for convenience, and convenience didn't like me, if you know what I mean. So I was around about 250 or so, maybe 400. I can't really remember.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. I was big. I wore like your size 40 some, like 48 jeans or whatever. And I'm just kind of walking around like a big, you know, just like a beach ball, like a basketball, like a pumpkin, like somebody stuck feet on a pumpkin. You know,
those were the days, man. Being fat and playing like PlayStation 1, those were some, those were some times.
Yeah, it felt real weird to jerk off back then. It was just like, what's the point? I'm not meant to do this. You know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Joel, were you fat?
Yeah, I mean,
I was 285 at my peak.
Oh, baby. Wasn't it weird jerking off at that weight? It's like, what am I doing?
I don't remember that specifically, although
I
do remember
instinct to look at me.
I mean, isn't this the problem, though, that Jared eventually decided that he should go on Craigslist and find people to do that for him because it felt so weird?
So Jared and I sat at the same lunch table because my brother was Jared's only friend and Jared was my brother's only friend. Me and my brothers didn't have friends because we had never lived anywhere for more than 3 months at a time because my dad was in the Army. Indiana's where we ended up. Jared was my brother's friend. My brother was Jared's friend. Kids used to yell stuff at Jared. My brother used to be like, yeah, man. And my brother was the cool guy. I could not go to Christmas anytime after that without my brother saying, you see Jared? He's on TV still. You see Jared? He got on TV. Jared's on TV. He's doing the Subway thing now. You see, yeah, he lost a lot of weight. Yeah, yeah, he's on TV. The guy's going to get rich. And then years later, it evolved to, you know, Jared hasn't said a word to me since high school.
Oh.
Did you know that? You know, Jared? Jared still, he's forgot all about his best friend, Roy. And nowadays he is posting every Jared update, that comes down the pipe on his Facebook. He is posting every single word about Jared. And he's like, look at this. Look at Jared. So here's what I'm thinking about Jared. I went to the same college as Jared. I ate at the same Subway as Jared. Now see, Jared graduated a year before me. And I was well on my way to losing weight by, you know, the end of the first semester, senior year. And I don't know. I went to college already with all my weight lost, but he lost it there. But I ate at the same Subway as him. He lost his weight over like 2 years, two and a half years. And he was my friend Big Joe's neighbor. Like they lived in the same little apartment house. And Jared like sold porn on VHS tapes to people. Like he would have like VCRs
allegedly
just dubbing porn. Well, I mean, I saw it, so it's like,
okay,
not,
so it's,
I
mean, confirmed.
I mean, let's go ahead and yeah, you know, if any New York Times, you want to give me a call, just give me a call. So here's what I'm thinking. Truman Capote in his book In Cold Blood talks about this murderer is somebody who, you know, I feel like he says, you know, he said of this guy, I feel like we grew up in the same house and one day, you know, but we never met each other in there. And one day he walked out the back door and I walked out the front. That's me and Jared, because I'm sitting around high school, you know, like a pumpkin with feet, like a big basketball with shoes taped to it. And I'm just like, man, I'm never going to have sex, man. I'm never going to touch a girl, man. I'm never going to talk to a girl. I'm never going to talk to anybody. And Jared's doing the same thing. Right? But Jared, opportunity knocked. And Jared went, he went from, you know, just imagine, it's like a superpower. It's like suddenly I don't hate myself. Suddenly I kind of like myself. I can talk to people. And I mean, obviously, maybe they're not judging you the way you thought they were, but it is like a goddamn superpower. And the guy, you know, found that he could have sex with girls and that, you know,
he became
maybe he
drunk on his own power is what you're saying.
Yeah. And, but see the thing, same thing happened to me. I'm going to admit it. I've had sex before, like whatever. Like, I mean, I know I say I haven't, but you know, I did once, twice.
By accident.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's just like, oops. And then it's like, you know, good times, party times, birthday hats, etc. And then it's like, imagine him though. I didn't get no $15 million for losing my weight, but he did. So what I'm saying is, you know, we enable evil even when we're not thinking about it, you know? Everybody's, we're all stars now in the dope show, you know what I mean? Like, we were all part of it. You ever buy anything from a supermarket and eat it, you're right up there with that kiddie fiddler. You know, no offense to anybody. It's all there, man. Opportunity knocks. I mean, and Jared knocked back. He went from fat guy.
I think it's an interesting thing when you sort of say that, because the thing is, like, since that news hit, I've been thinking, like, you know, I haven't had Subway in a long time. I don't like Subway, but for the last, like, two nights, I've been like, maybe I should eat at Subway.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Actually, it's not that it's not...
It's
kind of like no one can blame Subway for what he did, right? It's not like another one of those situations where the corporation has done something bad, right? It's that Jared, their spokesperson, has done something completely sandwich unrelated, unless he did involve sandwiches in any of the things he was doing.
There may be more details yet to come, yeah.
Did you see how cold Subway was? Subway was so cold, they were like, we have ceased our relationship with Jared. In light of these allegations. And then today they did it again. They were like, just reiterating, Jared does not speak for us anymore. And it's like, whoa, just ice cold. Can you imagine how many millions of psychopaths are just emailing or tweeting at Subway for all this? So yeah, what I want to say about Jared, my last word, the straight dope is Jared. He went from fat guy to that guy, and that's the straight dope.
Mm-hmm. All right,
very nice.
I had something else to say about Jared, but who knows where I'll say.
Well, you know what? One thing, if you are a fat guy that plays video games and you don't want to, whether that's play video games or be a fat guy, I'm not sure which, but it's real easy to stop. You just stop eating so damn much, and you immediately lose like 75 pounds.
Yeah, so that's not really right even there. The so much. It's like, there's many, many factors behind it, but for me, it was just, I got to stop with the sugar, and I got to stop with the just swearing off sugar and all that. But yeah, man, I played some video games. Jared played some video games too.
What was Jared's favorite
game?
Yeah.
Burger Time. You think Burger Time was up there? All right, here we go. Impromptu topic. Sandwiches and video games. What do we got? Burger Time, is that the best sandwich video game?
It's probably the
certainly,
best.
Certainly the most emblematic of sandwiches.
Well, certainly.
Maybe this is ridiculous, but I kind of don't consider a burger a sandwich. I always think of a sandwich as being not a burger. Like, a burger's a burger. It's on a bun. I feel like a sandwich is on bread. Is that crazy?
I'm going to have to, even though you are European by origin, I'm going to have to agree with that. That's pretty right on.
I don't know,
what about, like, a roll?
I think a burger is a subset of a sandwich, because you can definitely, you get a hero, that's on a roll, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, it's a hero sandwich.
You make a good point, because if you're like a junior G-man, you get a hamburger sandwich with some French fried potatoes. You know, that's...
You see?
But I just don't think of it as a sandwich. You know, like, the type of, like, bun that you have with the sesame seeds or whatever that's on it. Whereas, as you say, like, a sub, I mean, that's, like, a derivative of a baguette, which is a bread, you know?
A
like,
patty of
a
ground
roll.
Beef is known as a hamburg steak.
Yeah.
And a hamburger is a hamburg sandwich.
Yeah, I mean, don't go to Hamburg and start telling people they don't got no sandwiches there. They're gonna run you out on the rail.
Is a hamburg sandwich? I mean, yes. Isn't in sandwich. That's not how that sentence works.
Okay, okay. First of all, hamburger is American English for you're from Hamburg, is what it means.
Yeah.
That's all it means.
Yeah, like, Yeah, it's like Berliner, right? Like how famously JFK said, I'm a Berliner. And then people were like, oh, he said he was a donut. And he was like, and people are like, no, that's not actually what he said. He actually did say it correct. It's just that in the, when people look at it from a certain direction without context, it sounds wrong. But he did say it right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But since, anyway. Depending on where the hamburger stands, does this mean that the treasure-developed McDonald's game would fit into this category?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Well, well that's got to be a contender, right?
I don't accept. I refuse to accept that the hamburger-based games fit
I'm
into the
Googling
sandwich
McDonald's
situation.
Sandwich. We're going to see if the McDonald's original website calls it a sandwich.
Well, they might just have their chicken sandwich on there.
Here comes the copy.
Fish
you ready?
Wish, right?
Yeah.
Delicious, freshly made, and oh so satisfying. From the Big Mac to our premium grilled chicken club to our classic cheeseburger, McDonald's sandwiches make the meal.
Oh, man.
All right. All right,
so
McDonald's considers hamburgers a sandwich.
No, no, here's the thing. Who decided that McDonald's was the king of who says what a sandwich is? If McDonald's comes tomorrow and they say, see this thing, it's a sandwich and it's like a donut. It's a Berliner, right? Does that mean that we have to start accepting that they're sandwiches?
I want to reiterate that we are not sponsored by or affiliated with McDonald's hamburger sandwiches in any way.
McDonald's
first of all,
Bell
who knows?
VIP life.
We're all talking about Janet.
I'm
going
to learn more about
who
the double quarter pounder
Ronald's
with cheese.
Ronald's been up to.
Yeah. Ronald could be playing violins for children.
Oh, yeah. baby violin.
That's what a kitty fiddler is, right?
Or the Grimace. No one even knows what he is, right?
That's true. He's a big blue blob. Some sort of a prune.
He makes a sort of a facial expression.
Yeah.
I was going to say, his facial expression is actually very emblematic of the Pokemon expression in that photo where the kids are going into Pikachu's crotch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crotch a Pika crotch. Pikachu. So what? What are sandwiches
are there
in video games?
Are there sandwich-based games?
Give it to me. Somebody.
Well, shit. That's why we need here to go on Moby Games.
No,
sandwiches in video games. If Frank was here, I know what he'd say, probably. It's obviously, everyone references the sandwich in Deadly Premonition, which we never shut up about.
Yeah.
Right? There's the sinner sandwich in that. So that's a famous video game sandwich, which has, I think it's turkey, cranberry, and cereal?
Yeah.
Am I correct, Brandon?
I think that's
whoa.
Right. And then,
all right, so I'm on the Giant Bomb database under the video game item sandwich. And I gotta say, very few sandwiches in video games.
I think they're probably in Princess Tomato and the Salad Kingdom, there's got to be a sandwich in there.
I don't know.
Some kind of a vegetarian sandwich? That doesn't sound very Nintendo-centric to me.
Yeah, you're right.
NES-centric.
I know you can get burgers in Streets of Rage, that's for sure. But again, it's
burgers. Yeah, burgers don't count.
Burgers count.
There's got to be a
fast
sandwich
food
in our
empire.
In our least favorite game, River City Ransom, there must be some kind of a sandwich.
Oh, there's plenty of sandwiches in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's probably so many games where there are onigiri that have been just translated as sandwiches.
Sandwich,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like the Japanese sandwich, right?
Well,
to me, sandwich is, you know, something you go and you pick up and it's like quick, right? The onigiri is
if
the,
we can't
the classic
take McDonald's word for a hamburger being a sandwich, we can't consider an English localized onigiri sandwich a sandwich either.
No, I wouldn't consider it to be one either. I'm just noting that there must be lots of examples of that.
You know what they call them over here?
I say trust corporations. Trust. If it's not corporate sanctioned, I don't think we should trust it anymore. I think we need to follow the money.
Yeah.
Follow the money
Although,
and see where
actually,
it goes.
If we want to continue this, the original hamburger, there's this place, there's somewhere in America that claims to have the original hamburger.
Yeah.
And the original hamburger literally is two pieces of bread, a burger, and a slice of tomato. The guy is very strict about you cannot put ketchup on that burger.
Yeah.
It's two pieces of bread, like a mince or whatever, you know, grilled, and a slice of tomato. So technically the original hamburger I would consider a sandwich, but the derivative hamburger from which everybody eats nowadays I do not consider a sandwich. I consider it to be its own category.
Well, I don't know if we're ever going to get to the bottom of this. And
I just linked everyone
to
the final answer. There's no, we will never say agree to disagree on this show. I just linked to Disney.com Lilo and Stitch Sandwich Stacker, a Flash game where you play as the adorable alien creature catching sandwich ingredients on a piece of bread. It is clearly a piece of bread. It's not a hamburger bun.
Well, all right.
That ought to do it.
There we go. Well, sticking with the corporate theme here, because we know that we should trust them, of course. And we have, well, how should I put this? We have some alleged video game developers in this room, one of whom is launching a project tomorrow, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's coming out a little earlier. Oh,
not
Matthew
you.
Kumar?
Oh.
That's a joke. No, it's not
you.
Actually coming out, everybody. Owned. Everybody got way owned. Sorry.
Yeah, they got far more excited for the project that's not coming out rather than the one that is, which is exactly what you always planned.
Yeah, well, wait, what else are you going to do if there's no Video Ball tomorrow? Boom. So I got everybody expecting to have Video Ball, and now they're like, no, they can't have it. They're like, they want something else, because they immediately cleared all their plans for tomorrow.
Yeah, they're like,
well, see, this is
what
good marketing.
I need now.
Yeah, you're
like,
building
what I
need
demand. Now is a local multiplayer game developed by someone tangentially related to Insert Credit.
Yeah.
So if I can't have Video Ball, I will have Knight and Damsel, which is the game which I've been working on. MK Ultra Games is my company, compared to Action Button of Tim and Necrosoft of Brandon. And yeah, it comes out tomorrow on Steam, Humble, Itch.io, the Ouya, if you happen to have one of those, you'll be able to download it on that.
I thought that was called the Oh Yeah. That's a joke.
It should have been called the Oh Yeah. And it's a local multiplayer, uncooperative game, where one player plays a knight, one player plays a damsel, and they're attempting to rescue each other. It's kind of, the easiest way for me to explain it is to call it, Nidhogg meets Puzzle Fighter, sort of, which is not the perfect example, but it's that same sort of, back and forth of Nidhogg with, the throwing things on your opponent's screen of Puzzle Fighter, let's say.
When you give that description to your mom, what does she say? Is she like, oh yeah, Nidhogg meets Puzzle Fighter, I get it.
What she actually says, it's really funny, she goes, I show her the picture and she goes, hey, is that Sephiroth?
Yeah, that's right.
Boom.
But yeah, basically, if you're listening to the podcast, it will have been out a couple of days, and it is on special offer for the first 2 weeks. $7.99 rather than $10. It's as good as you're going to get. You should buy it.
What?
That is, thank you.
$10?
Thank you for the
pitch. What a deal.
Yes.
It is a deal.
Thank you so much for the pitch, because I just wanted to segue from that by saying that the only thing that I hate more than self-promoting indie game devs is corporate marketing.
Yeah.
It's funny that when you take really brand-centric corporate marketing and you mix it with video games, I don't have a problem with that. Like Pepsi Man in Fighting Vipers.
Oh, yeah.
Or
love those guys.
Mountain Dew in Jet Moto.
Yeah, you know, I don't even mind that stupid Toyota Yaris game that was free and garbage, because it's like, oh, look at this piece of
exactly.
trash.
Hang on a second. What? Toyota Yaris, fantastic automobile.
No, I'm not talking about
Absolutely.
The car. I'm talking about the game.
Don't you dare. Don't even, like, you can't talk smack about the game.
I can do
if
it.
You,
I just
if you
did
like
it.
The car. You gotta, no, car's great, game's great.
Ain't no Honda. I'll tell you what.
Oh, yeah, but the Toyota Yaris is a different thing. The Honda Fit, you driven that Honda Fit?
No.
Come on.
I haven't.
It's not as good as the Yaris. The Yaris is better.
Yeah.
I'd take a Honda something else over a Toyota something else, but I mean, the Yaris, beautiful, beautiful automobile. 5 stars.
Well, this may answer the question then is, the three of you all are currently working on a game about to be released, I believe, supposedly.
Supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
What product or corporate entity best reflects the brand identity that you wish to project? Wow. So you're about to get a shitload of bucks, and you got to put this product in your game. What product is that?
Oh, big, big dollars.
That's a
huh?
good
big, big, beefy.
We're
big,
talking
beefy,
big money.
Well, it has often
beautiful.
Been suggested to Tim that he should get that Doritos license because he's got tiny triangles in there already.
Yeah, big triangles. Triangles. Well, judging by these days, when you talk about video games, you got to put a beverage, right? So I say we got to start with the beverage, right? So what's the beverage for your game? So it's okay. So here's the thing. There's beverage. There's snack food, there's car manufacturer, and there's I'm thinking Mad Men,
and
there's
then,
airline.
There's
how about a lifestyle brand?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then lifestyle brand is the last one. So here's the thing. If we're talking like I'm thinking, like, in Mad Men, they said every ad agency needs a food, a drink, a restaurant, a car, an airline, and a lifestyle brand. Like, what are, like, so for me, the drink is, I don't know. It's got to be an energy. It's not Mountain Dew.
I know what my drink is going to be. My drink is going to be, I don't even drink it, but it's going to be some manner of bourbon, because I would like, I want the kids playing the game to be like, oh man, this game's for adults. And I want the adults who are the kind of guys that are like, yeah, just, you know, like Friday night, and they take a picture of their glass of whiskey or whatnot. I want those people to buy my game also. And I feel like those kind of people are going to evangelize the game. And so, yeah, some sort of bourbon is what my drink is going
to
be.
So wait, you specifically want your game to be bought by children and people who take pictures of their drinks?
Yep. Idiots.
How about like an insure shake? You could capture an older demographic that's currently not tapped.
That's true.
Other than like Sudoku games.
That's true.
But wait, what game is this though?
Oh,
is this Odear? No, Odear's already out. It's too late for that.
It's Gunsport. Yeah, it's too late for
Gunsport.
For
Odear
forever. No, we're gonna make another Odear later. So,
okay.
But that'll be some sort of like wheatgrass juice, because deer love that stuff. I'm marketing this one direct to the deer.
So they can watch themselves, make themselves get killed or whatever.
Yeah. For the car, it's got to be the Honda Prelude. For the airline, I'm going to go with Eva, because they have the Hello Kitty airplane, and that's pretty cool.
Uh-huh.
For restaurant, I'm not going to get a lot of money, but I'm going to do Lane Splitter for the pizza. And lifestyle brand... There's this, the only lifestyle brand that I enjoy, they make my cell phone case. They're called Kalai Deng.
Kalai Deng.
Yeah. And their motto here is be the most considerate accessory brand, quality, innovation, service, amazing every day. And,
quality's job one.
They make really good phone cases. So I'm going to use them. What am I missing? What did I not get?
Like a snack food?
Snack food.
What sort of?
Dang. Okay, it's gonna be Annie's fruit snacks.
Annie's
fruit snacks.
Yeah, the ones they got at Target.
They might have them there. Yeah,
they got them everywhere.
They got them at Whole Foods as well. Yeah, because they got those vegetarian gelatin-free fruit snacks. They're the best ones that you can get that don't have no horse bits.
I was going to say, would that be good for Odear, because they wouldn't contain like hooves and bones and whatnot?
Yeah, no, that's true.
Hooves and bones.
H&B.
Now, have you considered, Tim, a Little Caesars partnership for video ball? Because that kind of seems almost up their alley.
So I'm thinking, I mean, what do we got with video ball for a drink? These days, it's got to be an energy drink. Monster or Rockstar.
Yeah.
But I think Red Bull's the good one. You know why? Because it's $5, where Rockstar's like $2. Red Bull's like the expensive one. Also has really nice colors. The colors chosen on the can are really classy. I think it would be Red Bull.
What about Ice-T? Ice-T's brand of energy drink.
That's not a good one.
You mean you're not going to partner with Hulk Hogan's energy drink?
What's that one called?
Man,
does Hulk Hogan have an energy drink?
Yes, it's only available in Florida, I believe.
What's it called?
Nice.
Hogan Energy.
Oh, that's pretty lame.
Yeah, that's kind of boring.
Sold where all heterosexual white males shop.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
You could be confused and think that it was Paul Hogan's energy drink, the guy who played Crocodile Dundee.
Could. Yeah.
Sure.
Then you'd be more excited.
Although I think the regionality is what determines it.
What
product placements are we looking at for a Knight and Damsel here?
Hey, I didn't even say. I had a whole bunch in mind,
which is why I proposed the framework.
Yeah, I mean, I like that Toyota Yaris because that's a good little car. It's got a good, like, sort of an almost triangular shape to it. Feels like a video ball car. I'd put ads for that up there. And as for the lifestyle brand, it's obviously gotta be Muji. Muji, the Japanese housewares brand, the whole idea of the look of Video Ball is we want to make the Muji coffee cup of video games. Like, it's this industrially designed thing. Like, the prototype title in my head was like Muji Sport was like the idea. If you're not familiar with Muji, they make high quality products of an aesthetic referred to as super normal.
Actually,
that's what Muji is going for.
I'm holding it in my hand right now, actually. They make something which I would not consider super normal, but I'm kind of blown away that no one else does this. They make highlighters that the highlighter has a window in it so you can see what you're highlighting. So you know when you highlight something and it wobbles and you like start to highlight not the thing you're trying to highlight? This guarantees you will always highlight what you're trying to highlight.
Yeah, so the question of that is if it feels like a design flourish, but is it a flourish or is it
a feature?
Something that the designer regarded as completely essential to
it is essential,
the product.
But no one has ever seen that.
Yeah, so that's part of it. Part of the Muji philosophy is thinking, you know, being the one person to ask why not. And the other part of it is being the one person to ask why. About stuff that's not necessary.
I'd like to ask.
Yeah.
Why are Uniqlo shirts square shaped? Why are Japanese t-shirts like?
Yeah, it's obnoxious.
Well, Uniqlo's not Muji.
I know, but like, does Muji rectify this problem? I mean, are Japanese people square shaped? I just don't understand.
I think it's
Muji has a good cut. Uniqlo stuff is square because that's just the style, I would reckon.
I tell you what, my friends in France. When they go there, now that Uniqlo's everywhere, they don't have to do this anymore, but they used to go to this shirt store called,
Graniff.
It was Graniff. Okay. And they liked the cut there because it was square, because they were all like, yeah, you know, I'm getting that beer belly, and the square shape just hides it all, makes it look like I'm just a straight up and down square. Whereas I don't like it because it makes it look like I have a beer belly when I don't.
Mm-hmm. So I was gonna say you're a career skinny guy. You're not looking for that.
Yeah, no, I'm in this body for life, as far as I can reason.
Yeah.
So Matthew.
Yeah, your turn, Kumar.
What were the five or six things that Tim said? Just shout one at a time.
Beverage.
Okay, beverage. So for a night, we're not going to do me, we're going to do Knight and Damsel, right? So I guess, what did knights and damsels drink? Let's say tea, hot tea, because it's a classic, right?
All right.
Hot tea.
Just any hot tea?
It's got to be a
brand.
We need a brand.
We got to get
Black,
money coming in on this
English
project.
English breakfast.
Lipton.
Twinings?
Bentleys?
Yeah, Twinings. Twinings is actually very good. And, you know... The thing is, like, in the UK, you can buy Twinings in, like, a box, and it's just the bags. If you come to Canada or the US, you buy Twinings, it's always individual sachets, and then the bag is inside the sachet, and you're like, this sachet is a complete waste. There's only 20 in this box, rather than, like, 100, like there should be. So, a box of Twinings from the UK, not from anywhere else, where it's much more annoying.
Okay. Snack right. Food?
Food.
Snack food. What would Knight and Damsels have eaten?
Pretzels.
pretzels is the least likely example.
What if they're German?
Some kind
of
a crumpet? Thinking, like a Fig Newton, maybe. That's crumpetesque. A Newton.
Fig Newton.
You've never had a Fig Newton?
I don't think they have rich tea biscuits. We've already gone for the hot tea.
All right.
With, you know,
let's
the English
tea
Twinings biscuits. Hot tea. You go for McVitie's rich tea biscuits because they are very mild, but they're still sweet. They dip well, perfect accompaniment to the hot tea that we have already selected. So yeah, rich tea biscuits. There's a snack.
Me
food.
And Matthew Kumar ate some McVitie's biscuits in Tokyo in 2003 with some Kirin Metz grape soda. I remember that. They were on sale
go.
At the,
you appear to.
The discount supermarket downstairs.
Car. What would a knight and damsel drive? A cart? A horse? They would drive a horse.
What? Yeah, exactly. What would a knight and damsel drive? The answer is a horse. It's perfect. You know, you know, a horse. Basically, any kind of horse. Get yourself a horse, everybody.
And a lifestyle brand. Now, does this game have certain political leanings? Is this truly a feminist game? Is there some lifestyle brand you can tie into this?
Jezebel?
Well, I would backtrack on me saying that it's a feminist game because you can't really declare that sort of thing. It's more sort of like, you want to, you know, be a feminist ally and, explore these ideas through design and so on. So while I consider it to be something which explores, you know, feminist ideals, is also very much just like, like it's a video game, right? So there's only so much you can do in something where you try to do it purely for the mechanics. So that's maybe a slight overstatement. In terms of a lifestyle brand, I would say a horse. The answer is always a horse.
All right.
Because, I mean, think about it. You buy a horse tomorrow, that is going to change your life.
That's true.
That is true.
My life's going to be different forever after I get that horse.
I'm going to pay a lot of stuff to, like, keep that horse.
Get myself a pony.
I don't get a pony. They're different. They're not horses.
Yeah, I know. I saw some people riding around on ponies in Stockton the other day, but they looked like they were having a good time. I don't know.
Yeah, but they're kind of like slow horse. You got to own a horse before you can own a pony. Like, you got to own a Mercedes before you can own a Rolex, for example. So, I mean, there's rules to these things. Mm-hmm. You need a horse before you can own a novelty horse.
Well,
before you can own a pony. Go on a Rolex. A Mercedes. You can own a Rolex. So are you saying that if you buy a Rolex, it will eventually turn into a Mercedes?
No, because ponies are not baby horses.
It's true.
Ponies are a different species of animal. You creep. They're not the same thing. Sometimes a baby horse is something else.
Which is also sometimes called a pony.
Sometimes, but it's like a colt is a young horse.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's
or
not
a,
cry over
an urban
spilled
beverage.
Ponies. Oh, an urban, yeah, the number 45. That
speaking
particular
of
one, yeah.
Speaking of prestige indicators such as these, this maybe can segue to another topic. Who is qualified to play Mario Maker?
Oh, man. I suggested this as a conversation topic. I'm going to tell everybody something. Yesterday, I went over to, I have to say, a journalist friend's house.
Oh, no. Collusion.
I'm not allowed to say because...
Was it Scary Larry?
I'm not going to say. Yeah, Scary Larry from GamePro, yeah. So Nintendo doesn't want any of its people who have the game to talk about it unless they're expressly permitted to. So I went over and I played Mario Maker. And I'm going to tell you what. You're a piece of trash. You're a bag of dirt. You're a heap of filth if you can't get down with the good times in that game. You just sit down and you just make dumb levels. You make them real fast. You play them real fast. They're fun and cool. Anybody can do it. It's real easy. You can choose Super Mario Bros., Super Mario 3, Super Mario World, or the new Super Mario Brothers, which changes the look and the physics of the game. So you can match your levels, post them on the internet. People play them. They upvote them if they like them. They leave you comments if they have criticism. You must be able to beat your level in order to upload it. So here's the thing. It is all video game journalists playing it right now, okay? And I have got to say, and I'm being, this is me at my most diplomatic, those levels up there are atrocious. They are really, really bad.
Well, they probably
all
don't
want to
do it.
Levels. Yeah, that's part of it. And then part of it is these long, elaborate puzzle platformer-like levels, right? And it's like, Mario ain't no puzzle platformer, you rube. Mario ain't a puzzle platformer, you dolt. You vance. You maroon. What other words there are, I don't know. But it's like, that's not what Mario is. Say what you will about Jonathan Blow. The guy has like an IQ of like 170. That's like about what it takes to make any of those sorts of levels any fun at all. So it's like all this weird puzzle trash. And then all these levels that clearly don't understand pacing or blocking or staging or geometry or enemy placement or anything. I messed around for like a half an hour to make like two screens of a level that felt good, you know? I'm just imagining like Shigeru Miyamoto would just cry. I wanted to leave a comment on one guy's level, just, this is why Satoru Iwata is dead, period. It's like the sort of comments I wanted to leave on how bad some of these levels were. And I was thinking, there's 100 levels that Nintendo made that you can play in this challenge mode, right? And I was like, man, I wish all these people would play all of these levels and then get this stuff. And then I went, wait, hold on. Little Big Planet came out within like a month. There were 100 recreations of Super Mario Bros. 1-1, right? I'm like, I don't think people actually know what makes a good Mario level. And I got really scared because I'm going to buy that Mario Maker and I swear I'm going to make like 8 full worlds of levels that I will put up there and I will link to on Twitter and whatnot. But it's like, man, I don't think is going to be as successful as I really, really think it should be, because it's like nobody is making any good levels. There's just hundreds, thousands of levels up there, and they're just all trash.
Well, it's just game journalists
like
right now.
So what? So what I'm saying is, like, number one, these are the two branching paths here. What makes a bad platform level, a bad 2D platform level?
2D.
Number two, like, do these, 2D only. Number two, these game journalists apparently don't, like, they've illustrated, they've laid all the cards on the table. They don't know what good level design is. They couldn't execute it if their life depended on it, is what I was able to tell. And I watched a bunch of streams today that these streamers, and, oh, check it out, we're going to be making Mario levels. And it's just like, what is wrong with you, you filth?
So that part's not a question, but
that's not a question, but it's like, should a game journal, should a person reviewing games know, how much should they know about level design, about like the mechanical particulars of it?
I think it's an interesting question because, one of the things that I feel that made me go into game development was that having spent so much time of my life thinking about games as a journalist and as a player of games, that I felt like I'd start to pick up really on some level, and not to talk myself up too much, just what makes a game good, you know? And so it's kind of interesting to hear you talk about the people who've played this game and the levels you see up now to be of no quality whatsoever. I mean, I wonder, like, for you, Tim, and you, Brandon, do you feel that being being a journalist for so long made you a better game developer?
I definitely don't feel that did anything. I feel like playing a lot of games and thinking about them definitely helped, but the writing about them part didn't. And I mean, sometimes writing about things helps you to articulate an idea, but I don't think that I ever particularly wrote anything good about level design. And I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm good at level design. I made the tracks in Oh Dear, and the programmer hates them. He thinks that they're very boring. And I agree that they could be better, but at least there's a theme to them. Like, each stage introduces a new thing to you, and then the fifth stage puts them all together. So at least there's, while also introducing one last new thing. So at least there's a plan there, but I didn't really start out with a plan. So I don't think it actually really helped me. I think the only thing that helped me was doing it.
Yeah, so
Tim.
Oh, okay, yeah, so it's like, first of all, I don't really think I was ever a quote-unquote journalist as, like, a thing, but I did write about games, but I really only wrote about them because I wanted to know stuff, and I mean, I wanted to think more deeply, and I thought it was a good way to think more about that stuff. I always wanted to do Mario levels. I always wanted to make Mario levels, but I guess I was thinking about them not in the way that, like, a critic... Somebody was telling me today that there's some video on some website that says, you know, 100 reasons why Banjo-Kazooie is better than Mario 64. And it's like, I mean, come on. I mean, okay, Brandon, I don't think you really like either of those games too much, do you?
No.
You don't probably never even played Banjo-Kazooie. Which one's better? Come on.
I mean, it's definitely Mario 64.
Boom! Boom! So there you go.
It's
I don't think any of these people, I think a lot of these people writing about games are just like, man, it's like, okay, so for me, the only reason I wrote about games is because I wanted to make them. And I guess this was like a huge gong. This was just a bucket of ice water on my head that's like, yeah, definitely nobody, there's definitely a huge class of people who just write about games because they want to. Like, they don't care about the little stuff. It's just, they're just working on video games and they're just streaming them and stuff.
I don't know if you saw that.
Can I be the voice of reason here as someone who is not a alleged game developer or alleged journalist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And point out that people are damn idiots. So, like, what precedent is there for any good community-generated level design? Because, I'm thinking like the last Trials game with the level editor.
Yeah.
More like the trash editor, huh?
What's that?
Wait, you didn't say track editor, but the track editor, more like the trash editor.
Oh, yes.
If you've played any of those levels.
Good joke
from me. Quality joke from me.
Very nice. Thank you, Tim.
Well, I mean, I haven't tried the Trials editor, but I mean, obviously I worked on, maybe not obviously, but I worked on Sound Shapes.
Obviously,
right?
I worked on Sound Shapes.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously I did.
Yeah. Well, the people that I know already who are the people in this virtual room, that would be an obvious thing, I believe. But basically, the situation of that game is very, it's got an editor very much the style of Mario Maker, actually. You can't upload a level unless you've beaten it and so on. And I designed a bunch of the levels in the come with the game, right? So, there's the, Deadmau5 levels.
Deadmau5.
A bunch of stuff in the,
So wait, there's Deadmau5. Okay,
Jim
so
Guthrie
worked on
levels.
That game. You worked on that game and Deadmau5 is in it, right?
Deadmau5.
So can you tell me, I've just been, I've been arguing about this with my friend, for like a couple days. Is that guy actually dead? Okay, that's the end of my joke. There we go.
Good joke. Right. Anyway, I'm not attempting to, for example, name drop by saying I worked on some Deadmau5 levels. The thought is more that basically when I came to Queasy to work on Sound Shapes, one of the first things I actually did, just because I was interested in what makes good level design is, I opened up a bunch of Super Mario World maps, a bunch of Super Mario 3 maps, a bunch of Super Mario 1 maps, and I just started to cut them up into discrete chunks of where's the challenge in this screen, let's say. Because if you look at those games and you play them back, there's a bunch of individual challenges on the level that are like key moments or so on that are more or less repeated just in different variations. And I sort of realized that, and it's something which I would say that I've kind of attempted to recreate in some way in Knight and Damsel, that you can kind of take these individual chunks, because everyone has been sort of polished into being an individual moment, and just, you know, arrange them, randomize them. Do you know what I mean? You take a bunch of flashcards. We used so many flashcards when we worked on Sound Shapes, and you just place them in an order, and you see, is this a good flow? How does this work? So when I made Knight and Damsel, the game is supposed to be played, you can play it hundreds of times, right? There's no, real, sense of, there is a campaign, but it's more sort of just an introduction, and the idea is the arcade mode, you play it over and over again. And the idea is, like, every time you play it, I have designed all these discrete chunks of the level, which are randomized. But because of the way that these are all based around moments and the way they interact with each other, they should always work.
Level design,
you know?
Mad Libs.
So the interesting thing is the idea that people who have played like Mario for so long, and now they're like reviewing this game, that they don't see that in the level. Like I did see an article from, I think it was Chris Kohler today, saying about how he thought to himself, you know, the wall jump, that's what I'll build the game around. But then he realized he'd made loads of mistakes in the process of doing it. He didn't think to look at necessarily level design moments that shine the spot on that already and learn from those. So again, I just interesting.
There's very few levels in those new Super Mario Brothers that actually use the wall jump, like more than twice, I guess because they must have gutted out all of the parts that relied on it. Like, I was messing with the new Super Mario Bros. Wall jump yesterday myself. I like it. It's good. It feels good as far as video game wall jumps go.
I wonder what kind of a level I would make as a person who doesn't particularly, not that I dislike Mario, but doesn't particularly care for Mario. I wonder what that experience would be like for me if I would have a fun time, because
I think it would be superior to the ones that are going to be made, and here's why. And it's something that Kumar said that made me think of this, is like with Trials, I felt like I was approaching, I made one track in that game, and it felt like I was approaching it from a totally different aspect than anybody else out there. Like everybody else was thinking, what can I do that's going to make people just be impressed? Like, how can I trick them out and do something that they're not going to expect? And I was going just for feel. I just wanted something that felt good and it was fun and it gave you a thrill. And mine was a lot simpler, but I thought it was a lot better as a result. And I'm just mentioning this because I think Kumar might relate to it a little bit, is Rowdy Roddy Piper recently died.
It's true.
And, RRP.
RRP, that's
right.
Very
sad about that.
But I was watching an interview with him that was so fascinating because he made it really clear just in his interactions with the host that his whole gimmick as a professional wrestler was about modulating the mood and the feel of the interaction between the two people in the ring. And you compare that with wrestlers today who are all about doing flips and just crazy shit and trying to gain like a following for being such technical, you know, acrobatic experts. It seems almost like a generational difference where people that grew up with this stuff have a little bit of a different take that's maybe a little warped compared to people that sort of built it out of nothing. Because if you look at like a Miyamoto approach and you look at probably the best level ever made, Mario 1-1, and I'm talking like any platformer ever, that's just so, so different than just the tricks and the smoke and the mirrors of stuff today.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Well, I mean, it's like, that's the thing about wrestling, right? I mean, I'm fascinated by wrestling. I love the kind of world of it. Not so much that I really care to watch it, although I've been trying to watch, I don't know if you're interested at all, Joel, this Lucha Underground thing that people have been talking up recently. I've been trying to try that one out.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that, a great wrestler like Rowdy Roddy Piper was not great because he was technically amazing or he was fantastically ripped or something, or he just like looked amazing in the ring. It's that when he went into the ring, and even when he was out there doing his what do you call it, when you talk to the camera,
the promo
term for it, his promos, the idea was he was always sort of building a narrative. So his most famous match is the one against Bret Hart, right, where they sort of build this whole story, and in the match you can see he's playing the bad guy, and then he like chooses to not do the bad thing, but it's all been built by just like these, even just the moves that you wouldn't think are building the story. Every single building block is important to the ultimate, you know, pyramid or whatever that he has ultimately constructed in front of the audience. And that is the same situation with level design. Everyone goes on endlessly about how 1-1 introduces all the most important things to you straight away, right? That if you run forward, you die because you hit the Goomba, and if you jump, you immediately get the mushroom, and the mushroom is forced into you. But like every single, that's why when I was talking about designing levels, it's like taking these discrete chunks, these parts, because you can use these moments to build a narrative, basically. There's sort of that concept of diegetic and non-diegetic play, which is like if you play a video game, like I was just playing Far Cry 3 for some obscure reason, and you know, it builds all the story on top of it, where it's like you're this guy and all this stuff is happening, but at the same time, what was actually interesting to me is the sort of the diegetic play, which is like what I was actually doing in the world. So sometimes something would emerge, like I would be like attempting to, you know, capture an outpost. I have no real reason to be doing that, but then a target would appear and you'd like kill everyone in the outpost, and it was really interesting because that's what's happening in the play moment. And the idea is like people can easily lose the idea of the narrative that the player builds by going through the experience, by their attempts to, yes, like in the case of Trials or in the case of a wrestling match, of to have these moments where you shock or amaze the player by being like, oh, I didn't expect that or something. There's not as much thought put into it because you're so desperate for the cheap pop, you know, the one moment that will like make up for any other deficiency.
My problem with that kind of stuff with a game like Far Cry is you wind up with all of these unexpected stupid moments, and usually for me, once I get to one of those, I feel like I'm satisfied. Like, I know what the game is about by then. Like, there was a bit where in Far Cry 2, where I had to save this guy, and I did it through some way that was not fully intended by the dialogue, because I didn't kill anybody to get there. I just snuck in there because of some glitch. It was an earlier version of the game, but anyway, I got in there, and the guy's like, "Wow, you sure saved me from all those dudes, and it's good that they're all dead now." And he's like, "Anyway, I'm gonna go." And then he just stands there for a while. And then he looks at his watch. And then he just runs straight into a wall. And he just keeps running into that wall. Just booking it. And I was like, cool. That's my experience playing this game now. I mean, I know it has a lot of amazing technical things in it, but that was the moment that I identify with Far Cry forever. Because I wasn't compelled enough to really play it the right way. But I also wanted to say about the wrestling thing, it's interesting. I don't know if this is just the old people versus the young people or what, but there's that thing where there's this guy who's like The Rock's cousin. Who is this guy?
Oh, Roman Reigns. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so, Roman Reigns. Yeah.
Yeah. So the people don't really like him, but the man wants him to be the star. They want him to be the hero. But the fans don't care, and they want this. They want like anybody else. They want that beard guy. Who's that beard guy?
D-Bry.
Daniel Bryan. D-Bry.
Yeah, yeah, Daniel Bryan. So, like, there you've got your technical hammy showiness on the one hand, and you've got your people's choice on the other hand, and I do feel like there's probably going to be a lot of levels in that Mario thing. That are definitely like, what's my gimmick? What can I do? Like, even Chris Kohler was saying, I've already decided I'm not playing any asshole levels. Like, levels that are trying to do I want to be the guy or whatever, that are trying to trick you and play it up. Because, that's fun as a gimmick, and it's fun for a minute, but it's got no staying power. You're not going to come back to it. But the thing is, the world of today, streamers are going to play those crappy gacha levels, because I don't know if you've ever watched any streamers, but all they do is shriek and
yeah, just yelling.
They do like to scream a lot.
Like the way that they, I mean, I have to almost respect the craft, because they have to feign such incredible ignorance in order to do what they're doing, because they'll just be like, "What? There's a flashlight? Whoa!" And
what's the deal with that?
It's just like they've got to be all amped all the time about every minute, totally normal detail, and so it's like I wonder in the world of today whether something that's just well made, like how well is that gonna do?
Badly.
I mean, I think I think there's a way for it to do well. I think there definitely is, but it's
I mean, the thing is, you can vote stuff up, and that could be cool.
But if like PewDiePie, however you say his name, if he plays a level and he's like, "This one's hilarious," I mean, that's going to get voted to the top, even if it's trash.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, like, a good example of that is, there's it's not like a big blip right now, but there's a bit of a blip going on because there's some discussion of the fact that N++, the general consensus is it hasn't been doing that well, and it has been struggling really hard to get coverage, actually. So if you're not familiar with N++, it's, the culmination of 10 years work, rigging the merit metanet to try and make kind of like the perfect example of the type of platformer they want to make, which is like a single screen platformer with a particular type of physics. It's very much about you, so almost like speedrunning through the levels, if as it were.
And it's quite hardcore.
And, it's very hardcore, but it's not like a wannabe-the-guy. There's nothing cheap about that game.
No,
it's actually, I mean, I playtested it for a while, and in playing it, I actually consider it one of easily the most stunning like pieces of work I've ever like kind of like had the privilege to work on in that way, because it is so carefully considered on every level to be about the core of being a clean, good, easy to play, like clear platformer, pure, like absolutely the pure platformerness. There's no tricks to it, but I can totally see how in some respects that is something that is very easy to move past, to overlook, because it doesn't look like anything to the first glance. There's not going to be a moment like a goat simulator moment where you're like, lol. It's just going to be like you against the game, and like you either kind of get it or you don't. And if you don't get it, it's because you haven't tried to meet it on its level.
Yeah, it's like it's like fart jokes versus I don't know, what's a good kind of joke. Whatever the good kind of joke is.
Are you saying there's a problem with fart jokes?
No, I'm just saying they're real easy. Like an easy joke that you can lull at right away and then just go around and tell your bro to, versus a joke that you actually need knowledge and context to understand. Like the stupid tweet that I stole from somebody, I don't even know who I stole it from, where it was like typical Western character and typical Japanese character, and the typical Western character was Solid Snake, and the typical Japanese character was Philia from Skullgirls. And man, there were so many people that were just like, it doesn't exactly work if both characters are Japanese. There was another guy who was like, both these characters are American, so you don't even know what you're talking about. And then there was a third guy who totally understood the whole thing. He was like, actually, Solid Snake is a Japanese, character, designed by this person, and Philia is an American character designed by this person. And so you're totally wrong. I was like, you got the joke without realizing there was a joke. And I feel like that's also a problem.
Yeah, it totally is. But I think so many things relate to the fact that, and this has probably always been the case. It's just that now, with the blessing of the internet, it's more apparent, is that people really want instant gratification, and people also really want the first thought that came into their head to be the right one.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They don't want any more thinking. They already came up to a decision. And that's enough.
Yeah. It's true. Well, there's so many things to decide on all day long. If you're looking at social media, it's like, how do I feel about this? How do I feel about this? It's like you're constantly being petitioned. It's like we have big brothered ourselves. Like, the whole, like, in all these sci-fi stories where you're having stuff marketed directly to your brain, it's like we've chosen to do it. We've put ourselves in a situation like on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, where we're like, yes, market to me right now. Even if it's just your friends posting like militant vegan parables or something, you know, you're deciding whether yes or no to that all day long.
Damn, it's my fault that that's all I get is like police brutality videos.
Yep, it's your fault.
Man.
Technically, that's not your fault. That's society's fault.
Yeah, that's true.
I think it's time to assume responsibility here, people.
So what I'm going to say about Mario Maker, here's the straight dope.
Please.
I'm going to get that game. I want it. I god darn want it. It's going to be mine. You can't stop me. You can't stop me. You can't. And you can't stop me neither. It's going to be mine. I will have it.
Okay.
I will have the precious. Okay, that's number one.
Who was the fourth
number
one that
two,
you pointed to, by the way?
Somebody outside.
Oh, all right.
There's a guy out there walking his dog. The next thing is I'm going to make some good old levels.
Sweet.
I'm going to make a whole bunch of them. I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to have more fun with it than watching Netflix. One cool thing, like the music in the editor mode is like really good. They got like, just the music was just blowing my mind. The user interface, the polish, blows my mind. Like just hanging out in the little lobby and like scrolling through the level and just being like, looking at it. Looks more fun than Netflix. I'm going to get it. My buddy Brent Porter's going to get it. Michael Kerwin's probably going to get it. We're going to make levels, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to play each other's levels. Heck, those goddamn idiots out there on the internet. You wanna subscribe to the home box office, to the HBO of Mario levels? Come on over my E house, and get tore up, because that's what's gonna happen. None of this stupid nonsense with a million monsters or whatever. I'm gonna give you the straight dope, and that's the straight dope.
Tim, I have a question though, which is like, I have very little interest, although I think Mario Maker, having played it, it is fantastic. And it is a great tool. Having, you know, made levels so much in my life by this point, it's just work to me, and I can't imagine doing it for free for Nintendo. Do you know what I mean? Why would you want to spend your time doing
that? Ooh, that's my question.
I got
as
two
well.
Reasons for you. Two reasons for you, you piece of dirt. Number one, Super. Number two, Mario.
You've already made Toffee and the Terror Bones. You know you can make a platformer. Why not just make a platformer that's as vanilla as Mario and so put this it is, out
whoa!
And charge
vanilla?
$3 for it or whatever?
Mario has beautiful locomotion.
Some people like
beautiful
vanilla.
Face. A beautiful, beautiful nose.
Not necessarily an insult. Some people like vanilla.
A beautiful, there's flavor to it. Mario's got flavor. Mario's got more flavor than a vanilla flavor.
I just like to state when I say vanilla, it was not meant as an insult. It was meant,
it's got
like,
some
vanilla
sprinkles.
Is the base. The vanilla is
you
the
were
base
hating
flavor,
on white people,
right? Vanilla
is
the original ice cream. I don't know if it is the original ice cream. Like,
you were
dissing
the whites is what you were doing. You were making fun of me
vanilla.
For being white.
If I went into an ice cream shop and they don't have mint, and I don't really like mint with the chalk chips in, I just like mint on its own, I'll get vanilla, right? The point is,
the best,
is that
the best
Mario
like
is...
three ice creams I've ever had, for the record, were all vanilla. Like, they were like, the three times I had ice cream where I was like, oh my god, that's good, they were all vanilla, so I get what
exactly.
You're saying.
Mario is the ice cream, so that when I call it the vanilla, like it's the basic, it's obvious, you know how to do it. There's so many small touches to it that make it so good, as you state the locomotion, for example, which is like using real vanilla, not using vanilla extract in your ice cream. But the point is that I know that you are capable of that, so why would you go to the point of like spending $70? You're not even doing it for free, you're doing it for $70. You're spending $70 to make levels for someone else when you could make a game by yourself.
Well, I can tell you
it's all about
right on.
Tell me one.
Yeah, well, it's probably different for you, but for me it's like, it would be, it's an easy way to practice making something a little better, because
that's number one. Yeah, that's what's
they've got
in there.
That smoothness of interface, as I understand, that is going to facilitate my ideas coming to fruition very quickly and easily, and I don't have to like I need the practice, frankly. So for me, that would be the reason. I can't think of any single other reason, though, because I know it will feel like work to me no matter what.
So it's real smooth interface. It's immediate feedback. It's a whole bunch of – there's just a whole bunch of items and gimmicks and objects and obstacles and enemies and power-ups already all in there in the game for you to just have a big weird playground with. So there's a smooth interface, robust options, immediate feedback. You get the endorphins. You get the, ooh boy, I just gotta like, you get all that stuff. You get to watch people play your levels. It's just immediately, it's like you're making a little platform game and releasing it right away. Second of all, let me tell you something, okay? I don't make no video games about somebody just jumping around. I only make games with guns in them now, okay? Video Ball's done. It's all about guns. If it don't bleed, I ain't developing it.
That
it's all about
fair.
Violence, murder. You play that game, Hatred? That's Sesame Street compared to what we're doing over
here. If it don't bleed, I don't need it.
Yeah. For anyone listening who thought that was serious, that's a joke. We're still going to keep making weird little quirky kind of industrial designy games. Don't worry about
Punk.
It.
Shit. Well, do we still have time to talk about Dragon Quest XI for 3DS?
Man, I mean, not really.
What is there to say about it, aside from the obvious, you jerk? There's only one thing to say, which is that it rules.
I don't think it does.
You say, what's the deal with that?
Whoa! Wait, what do you mean you don't think it rules, Brandon? What's wrong with it?
In your estimation. What's the point? Why do I need to have 2D on the bottom screen and 3D on the top?
Well, because...
Just because it's cute?
It will be the 30th anniversary of Dragon Quest. That's number one.
Yeah. They're trying to please everybody.
There have been three visual styles in Dragon Quest. There's been the top-down 2D.
Yeah.
There's been the side-on rotating camera from the Dragon Quest VII and the DS remakes. And then there's been the Dragon Quest VIII full, luscious, luxurious 3D.
Yep.
So there's been three types. And they're releasing all three types on one day.
Because they're scared.
That's nice. Oh, well, there's a little bit of fear in it, but, I mean, there's an Unreal Engine full 3D Dragon Quest that they're making. That's cool. I mean, like, this is exactly the kind of thing that I get a little bit, like, genuinely scared when people express negativity about it. Because it's an old dude, it's an old guy who has stuck with making games, and they've always been the same quality. I don't think about Dragon Quest X because that was clearly an online game. But there's the same quality standard. And I remember when Dragon Quest VII came out, Dragon Warrior VII came out in the US, and all the blogs and gamers.com or whatever was like, oh, it's just, it's so old school. These games don't change. And I was like, no, don't say that. Don't talk like that. Don't talk like, oh, they don't change. It's like, they don't have to get better. They're really good. They know what they're doing. The minute they start trying to do more stuff, you know, maybe they stop doing some of the old stuff as well. I don't know. I feel like as this guy gets older, his story writing gets better. The worlds get richer. You know, let's let him write a new one.
I'm not going to stop the guy. It's just, you know, the idea of...
You think the 2D is dumb.
I don't think it's dumb. I think it's superfluous. I think that's making a lot of crazy assets and doing a whole lot of work. I could make a bunch of video games for what they're spending on doing that. Obviously.
They're going to make some cash.
Yeah, they're going to make some off it. But it feels showy to me. It feels arrogant. It's like, look at the resources that I possess. Here they are. You wanted everything? Guess what? And that is, I guess that's cool, but it just feels, it makes me feel weird. It makes me feel bad that this guy can do all that and doesn't need to. I mean, I guess it's generous in a way.
It's very generous.
But in another way,
it's a quality product.
It feels like he's hoarding all the marbles to me.
Yeah, Yuji Horty. So you just left a really big suitcase in my living room, the kind that's going to take like a week to unpack, if you know what I mean. So it's like, man, this is like, okay. So I mean, you've probably seen some editorials about Japanese video games being in the crapper.
Yeah.
You've mentioned in conversation about Tokyo Game Show sucks now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like there's nothing there. The Japanese game industry is scary and sad. We all have seen that the games that are making the most money are the mobile games now. It's like Dragon Quest XI is like a real big, look at this.
Yeah, well,
we got console games and we're doing big weird stuff.
I'm not
with
against it.
We don't care about that. We just care, like, why did they say instead of making one cohesive game, we're going to make two different games and display them simultaneously to confuse you?
They are not different games. They're the same game with different graphics.
That's what I'm trying to say. Like, why do I need to look at the same game twice on my same
this
device?
This is the flagship Japanese video game franchise. Like,
can I,
It has
say
a
something?
History.
Yeah.
What do you want to say?
I believe that the game is only simultaneously shown for like the first chapter. After that, you choose one or the other.
Oh, really?
The idea is, yeah, I may be stating this incorrectly, but what I read...
Now, that would be crazy.
Claimed that's literally what the situation is. The situation is that basically you can choose how you want to experience the game. You either... you know, use the 2D version or you use the 3D version, which does seem completely bonkers
to me.
Yeah, now
that's nuts.
That means that literally half of the assets will be completely missing from your game. And that's, so that's like another game you don't play.
Now that would be ridiculous. Like,
but I might be wrong.
If that's the case, I'm in far greater support of showing both. But what were you going to say, Tim?
I don't know if that's really it, though.
I hope it's not. I really hope it's not. That would be...
I feel like you're able to kind of Halo switch, like flip-flop between them. I feel like you are.
You may be able to flip-flop between them, but I don't believe that the whole game shows both the exactly what you're seeing twice. You just pick one on the top screen, and then the bottom screen is used for your usual stuff, you know?
Well, I don't know the context of the video that I watched, but after the opening stages,
you do have to switch between 3D and 2D. It's like, I don't know. I like that. I mean, there are people in Japan who talked smack about the 3D in Dragon Quest VII and then talked smack about the 3D, in the DS version. It's like, I'm not going to get that on DS because it's not in 3D. There's people who are like 70 years old who play those games, and it's like they don't want them in 3D. It's like there's a wide variety of people. Like they're showing this as much respect as they can.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel that way to me. It feels like if you're going to show yourself respect, you're going to choose one, and you're going to be like, you know what? We made a decision. We're making this game, and this is how it is, and you should try to like it because we made intelligent decisions based on our years and years of experience. And if they're like, you know what? You guys are right. You should be able to choose whatever you want. We couldn't possibly choose for you, so here's both. Like, that's... I don't know. I don't like that.
You know what that reminds me of is... I think it was Capcom versus SNK2 on the Dreamcast. Mm. And on the spine cover there, it said, 2D will never die.
Yeah.
And I believe that's the last 2D fighter Capcom ever made.
Yeah.
Boom, idiots.
It's true. But they were right. 2D didn't die. Just they stopped supporting it.
Just got shitty.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some all right 2D. Capcom cases have been like, listen, me and 2D love you very much.
That's right.
It's not your fault. It's just that we have to live in different houses now. And look, you're going to get two Christmases, okay? So just deal with it.
Yeah, you know, we could talk about this all day long, but let's talk about that next time, because I got a lot to say about that stuff.
I'm digging through some stuff here. I'm trying to find out if you can... No, wait a minute. Hold on.
All right.
According to Silicon Era, after the opening stages, you have to select which style to play, but you can switch between 3D and 2D style at any time. So there you have
it. Yeah, that was... I mean, the point I was making was you are still... basically probably choosing one to play through the game as. What I think is interesting about this aspect of the game is that it basically implies that the game feel of a Dragon Quest is not important. Like the way that you move the character and things like that, it's just purely the mechanics of battles and stuff. Whether they're in 2D or 3D, they don't really care. You know, that's what's...
Have you ever played one?
Yeah, I played all the way through 9, and I loved 9. Like, I played, like, 9 for, like, 70 hours and enjoyed every minute of it. But the idea that they don't think that they should just concentrate on one seems weird to me. Like, because if you want to polish it to the best example that it can be, that every movement, every touch, every aspect of it is important, to do that twice in a row says that that's not a unified experience to me. I mean, I may be wrong. I will totally get this, and I will play... I will get it if it comes out in English. And I will play it in 3D, actually, because I love the 3D in 9, but I just don't know if that's... I don't think they should have done the 2D version, if...
Yeah.
Probably, you know?
You know, like, in the Halo game, you're gonna... You can switch back and forth between both the original Xbox graphics and the new shiny graphics, and you're going to do that like 5 times throughout the game. You're not going to do it all the time.
I just played through Halo 1 and I did it like 100 million times. It's fun. Sometimes the visibility is like way better in the original Xbox version.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, in my like final, just my straight dope word here, I'm just going to say they've been making these goddarn games for 30 years, and they have so much experience making them. And yes, the graphical presentation of this game is just not as important as the heart of it. Like, the heart of it is not graphics. And it is a beautiful, delicious treat to have the graphics that Dragon Quest VIII has. But you could play it 2D top down with Dragon Quest I sprites and it would still be a good time. Cause it's just got a story that's paced really well and told really well and has good writing. And it's got a soul to it, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. They're my favorite games of all the games. So, you know, whatever. But yeah, I am going to play all three types of the game. And that's the straight dope from me.
I ran all types.
I don't know about anybody else's dope, but that's my straight one.
Should we get a dope roundup here and end it at that?
Yeah.
You just dope whatever, man. I don't care.
Cricket dip.
Personally, my disappointment was that when it was presented in conversation last week, because I don't pay attention to this shit, the way Brandon described it made me think it was like Dark Savior, where you have 3D backgrounds and 2D sprites.
Oh, no, I wish it was that.
This is what I love.
Yeah, none of that for you.
Best aesthetic ever.
Yeah, get owned, idiot.
I'm owned.
Yep, Dragon Quest XI. Get owned, idiot. That's the tagline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say to it, and then I'm going to own it.
Twice the graphics.
Get owned three times, because I'm going to play it all three styles at once. All
right. If you even can. You're just going to be constantly cycling back and through it. Give yourself a migraine.
No, I said I'm going to play 1 hour at a time, PS4 and then 3DS.
Yeah, there's made those print adverts. It's like Yuji Horii's gonna make you his bitch, and it has like the three in the corner of the bitch, so it's like bitch cubed.
Yeah.
Yuji Horii's gonna make you switch graphic styles.
Woo! Yeah.
So there you have it. Yeah. So Matthew, you want to put in one more plug there as we close this out?
Yeah, you should, Knight and Damsel will have probably been out by a couple of days by the time you're listening to this, and you should go, to, I guess, knightanddamsel.com, or just Steam, I guess, or load up your OUYA. You can just, you know, it's probably still on if it's plugged in, because it doesn't turn off. I don't know how to turn that thing off. I don't think you actually can turn it off. I don't think that's the thing it does. And you can buy that game. It's $7.99 for the first 2 weeks, so you've probably got, 12 days or something left to buy it, you should do it.
Act now before it's too late.
What else are you going to do with your life?
Yeah, don't not get it, you pieces of garbage.
Yeah, because it's going to be a long-ass time before Dragon Quest XI comes out in English, if at all, so you got to do something.
Yep.
Get your head out of that garbage bag and go check out that video game. Right?
Yeah.
So there you have it. So, always trust corporations and buy that game. And what else did we learn today? Only children should be allowed to make Mario Maker levels.
Yeah.
And I think that does it.
I think that's it. So you should follow us on the Facebook, facebook.com/ICPodcast, I think, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Man, I can't remember.
Just look up insert credit.
Yeah,
look it
up and you'll find us. And follow us all on Twitter. I'm at Necrosofty, Tim's at 108, and Matthew Kumar is at Matthew Kumar. And there's only one T in that for you noobs out there.
I guess next time, will Frank be back? Frank will be back. Matthew will not be back. And I will not be back for a while. So get somebody more entertaining.
Or equally.
Then I might
you're
actually listen to the
one
show.
One last trip to the funeral home, huh?
Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
Well, thanks for having me.
Indeed, thank you.
Wahoo!
Wahoo yippee. It's been a fun.
Good night, everybody.
Goodbye. Get owned.
Insert credit show.
Over, yeah!
Brandon.
Yeah.
That when you were telling that story about Far Cry 2, it reminded me of like, my favorite thing that ever happens in Fallout 3,
yeah,
which is when you rescue who plays the dad in Fallout 3? It's somebody really famous. The guy from Taken.
I don't remember. Liam Neeson?
Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson plays your dad, right? I think it looks like Liam Neeson and everything. So you rescue and you're standing in the wasteland and your dad's like, and Liam Neeson's voice is like, I gotta go to whatever town. And then he's like, I'll see you there. And then he just like runs into the wasteland, like at full speed. And you can, the best thing about this is you can follow him the whole way. He runs all the way across the map to get to the town. And it's just hilarious. You're just like chasing after him.
Yeah.
Like, cause it doesn't even make any sense that you've just met your dad after like 20 years. And he's like, well, I'll see you in that town. And he just runs at full pelt. It's amazing.
That's pretty good.